Every morning when I wake and see your face, I wonder how the years got us to this place. Before I met you, I was alone, but I'd trade every penny I own.
I want you back like you used to be. A total stranger to me. I'd trade the good times that we had and go back to being lonely.
It couldn't be this bad. You're angry and bitter and confused. Girl, our problems are a direct result of you.
10 years later,
you used to be a total stranger to me. I'd trade the good times that we had and go back to being lonely. It couldn't be this bad.
It takes 6 seconds or the length of 2 football fields for a large truck traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. Never cut in front of an 18-wheeler for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Welcome to Ebony Spectrum for another week. Kevin Amos here with you. Rick and I have several things to share with you. And our first thing comes from Native Land Podcasters.
Welcome home, everybody. This is Tiffany Cross, Angela Rye, and it's me, Andrew Gillum.
Hi, Tiffany.
What's up? What's up? You are tuned into this week's mini pod. And to be fully transparent with you, we were actually going to go in a different direction, but yeah. I think our nerves have really been pricked by the news of the day, and yes, the Trump conviction. But really, I think what we want to delve into a little bit is how our language, and more than our language, how Trump is experiencing the system, the exceptions that have been made, the curves that have been cut, if it's plausible to apply it to him, is it possible that some of those same things, one, maybe never needed to exist in the first place and should be wholesale applied to the rest of us? We're talking about everything from the beginning of the process of an investigation, charges, a grand jury, an arraignment, when you have to go and submit yourself, a trial and selection of a jury, to how a verdict is received by the public. Is it legit? Is it illegitimate? What makes it illegitimate? And who gets to decide that? And so today I'm hoping we'll spend just a few minutes on this subject and invite you all into the conversation as well. Tiffany, Angela, I'd love to just sort of kick it off with each of you reflecting on beyond just the guilty verdict itself in the Trump trial, and the way in which this has been talked about largely in cable news, but also in print and otherwise on social media, how folks have weaponized, I think, certain terms. And therefore, how have y'all either been conflicted or pricked or reminded of something that you're like, you know, this, it doesn't feel quite right. Something about this is just isn't working for me.
I think there are a lot of things that don't feel quite right. And I think we actually, it may have been last week, we went into like what we thought was wrong with the trial in itself. But I think for me, there is this celebration of his mugshot. Or remember when they used to be at Trump rally saying, lock her up. Yeah. I don't have a desire to say lock him up back. Like, you know, him going to jail, like maybe just so that we're no longer like threatened by his presence. Fine. But like, I got to be honest with you. My natural disposition is not to thrive in people being locked up. I'm not quite abolitionist all the way, but I'm pretty doggone close. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this case is making me look very hard at where my hypocrisy lives and where my blind spots are. I think what is frustrating and maddening to me about Donald Trump is the way that he's using our language to make it seem like he's having that same experience when in fact he's having like the concierge version.
Yeah, it's the limousine version.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's supposed to get the Pinto.
But if we are now saying, or not we are, but there are folks among us whose politics we're more aligned with are saying, call him a felon, call him for what it is, all of these things, I just don't really delight in that. Like, I would much rather figure out how to use his concierge version to democratize access to that version of the justice system than to have him in a reversal and going back to what we know has not served us and has been overly burdensome and harsh to us. Even thinking about the man we just talked about who couldn't pay child support, so his license was suspended. So I'm just thinking about these terms, felon. Should we be calling someone a felon? We already say returning citizen. So why am I going to say felon about Donald Trump?
Yeah.
If we are saying, you know, we want him, you do the crime, you do the time. Well, what does that time really look like? We talked about some of that again on the last pod, but I want to make sure that one of these key pieces that's been driving me nuts around, well, should he be able to run? Sure, he should be able to run. And every one of the people in our communities who has committed an act that they regret.
Yeah.
And they have paid their time there's been restitution and they served a sentence. They should be able to vote. Mm. And so I would much rather democratize access to this alleged democracy than to be trying to find other ways to shut it down. Because what we know ultimately is if we shut it down for Trump, there will be an ironclad wall for us.
The pendulum swings.
It swings violently.
Yeah. And I, you know, this is making me think of other things of our ask. As a community, our ass ASS and our ass
ASK.
To cover our asses in the community with our ask. And so with Donald Trump, for example, let's say he does get locked up. Okay. I don't really care. I don't know if that's going to impact how that impacts me personally. I think it impacts the idea of America on a global stage for sure. But I'm not getting a Donald Trump was locked up. Here's your prize. If Donald Trump is able to vote in Florida, that is not impacting my community in a big way. It's one vote, one person. It's making me think of when Tucker Carlson was fired from Fox News and everyone was saying, let's call this Tiffany Cross Day or let's everybody like celebrate Tiffany today. And I'm like, I don't give a shit that Tucker Carlson was fired. What is that doing for? Yeah. Did it put money in my pocket? Yeah. Did it offer me any restitution for things I've gone through? Not really. So what do I care if this man gets fired or not? Also, when Colin Kaepernick was unfairly and unjustly dismissed from his job, and we were demanding,
and blackballed.
Blackballed. We demand you let Colin Kaepernick play. Okay, so we get this one man to play football. Our ass that little, you know? Yeah. Like, we need to Angela's point, disrupt a system.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. And you have to participate in it, even if your participation is solely to disrupt it and rebuild what actually services us.
Yeah.
So I definitely take your point about the individual action with Donald Trump. Around the language, I would say, they are just not a creative people. Mm-hmm. Like, they have, they, everything we do, they take. And we are a bottomless bucket of creativity, of innovation, dopeness, of swagger, innovation, all of that. And so they can't even, their insults are typically things that have derived from us. They turn woke into a pejorative.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't, they couldn't come up with something to support law enforcement. So they took Black Lives Matter and said blue lives. I ain't never met somebody with blue skin. I don't know what that means, but they like blue lives matter. Yeah. You can't even come up with your own slogans. Yeah. You know, like, they, it's thievery, nonstop thievery, because that's what they do. That's what they know how to do. So when their jargon becomes dangerous, to your point about felons and how we speak about that, I do wonder how that language will start to impact policy.
Yeah.
And even if, you know, on a wing and a prayer, if Biden is able to hold the White House, if Democrats are able to hold the Senate, if they flip the House, what does this mean for people who have adopted some of that conservative language? You know, you know, like, we'll show you that we're the true party of law and order.
Yeah.
And who typically gets impacted by that is us.
Yeah.
So it is. I hadn't thought about it, honestly, Angela, before you raised that point. I'm like, oh, that is something to consider. I don't know what the solution is. How do we get ahead of this? I think is the question.
How do we co-opt them versus them co-opting us in this criminal justice, you know, piece? Well, one, Why not call them to the carpet on their legislation? Y'all have backbenched this large wholesale criminal justice reform piece of legislation. Tim Scott was a part of, Cory Booker was a part of. We got bits and pieces of it, but by and large, wholesale the system.
What, you're talking about the First Step Act?
Yeah.
I mean, but
the first step of a tiny step.
Right. That's why it's called the first step.
Correct.
Because there needs to be a second and third step. Yeah.
And then real gigantic leaps.
And it's at the federal level. So a lot of those police policies were federal police that did very little for
local
policy.
So if we took at the state level, for example, Ron DeSantis, you want to, you know, shortcut the system for returning of rights to former felons or folks who identified as felons, then make it work for everybody.
Do it for everybody.
Do it for everybody. Yeah. If you are in Congress and you're saying the system doesn't work, that it is stacked against certain people, then let's unstack it for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If you're sincere and you're genuine about that, you want to interrogate whether or not the grand jury process was right in deciding to go after him in the first place, and you think that they will indict a ham sandwich, you feel that's real?
Yeah.
Then take the teeth out of the goddamn grand jury.
Yeah.
Why should it be used as a cudgel of prosecutors to go after who it is that they choose and want to go after? If you believe that sincerely, then it can't be true just in his case.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be true. It's got to be true in other cases, and I would argue probably the overwhelming majority, and I would reject their definition of that being his experience and his experience alone, right? So as I looked at these folks on the Sunday shows and I listened to well-regarded senators and folks with real position and with real power taking, I mean, a machete to the criminal justice system as it sits in this country, except they only limited to their comments about Donald Trump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you think it's wrong, if you think it's inherently bad, if you think it needs to be leveled, if you think prosecutors decide political enemies and then they go after them, then figure out a way to defang it.
Well, look, we could talk about the Hunter Biden case.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, y'all so concerned about gun control?
Come on.
Good to hear.
But guess what?
Welcome to the party.
But not one of them cited Hunter Biden's trial, which began this week, as an example of a little known statute being never before applied statute being applied to the son of the president.
Right.
Right. They chose the line of that Republicans are now at the centerfold. They're the example. They're the target of prosecutors. Well, no, Marilyn Mosley's not a Republican. I'm not a Republican.
Mm-hmm. Leo Wise is also the prosecutor now attached to the Hunter Biden case. That was the one who went after Marilyn, mm-hmm. just so people know.
Yep. Again, a conservative who's really in the shop, he's in the tank for, their side. So the truth is it wouldn't feel so goddamn disingenuine and so dishonest and so wrong if they weren't so selective about their usage. And it's already clear they don't really have fidelity to fact or to truth. They just need whatever the narrative is to fit their scenario. And right now it happens to be Trump.
So just to take this a step further, we're talking about the ways in which Donald Trump's justice system should be everybody's justice system. Yeah. We are not trying to take him into the oppression of ours. Mm-hmm. I know he thinks he's oppressed, but you don't know oppression yet.
He's an oppressor.
Let's roll this clip.
If Donald Trump can be a felon and be president, then we absolutely, without a doubt, in this country, need to make sure felon is removed off of all job applications. Felon is removed off of rental applications. Felon is removed off of professional certifications, things like dentists, massage therapists, realtors, mortgage loan officers. Those are professional certifications. Anything like that, felon needs to be removed off of it, because the highest position in the land should be the most sacred and should be the example for everybody in this country. And if this is not a political post, this is an equal opportunity post. And this is a post that is about not holding down the everyday average American citizen.
That's right.
I love this because I think that it demonstrates for people who have been privileged not to have had any entanglement with the criminal justice system, you don't know how many areas it impacts.
Absolutely.
Do you know that if you have a felony on your record, you can't even get pre-check, TSA pre-check for a certain amount of time.
Right.
You cannot get global entry for a certain amount of time.
You cannot live in a housing authority with your family.
Housing authority, really.
You may not live in federal housing as a felon.
Wow.
So with that label.
I had no idea. It is the scarlet letter that makes life harder for you, more expensive for you, more inconvenient for you. And I know that people would argue that is the price you pay for being convicted. But what if you were wrongfully convicted? What if you were convicted as a child, but you were tried as an adult? Mm-hmm. What if you made a mistake? And what is the point if we keep saying you were rehabilitated? We say that the system is supposed to be about rehabilitation. But is it? Yeah. Is it ever? It only feels like punishment to our folks.
And if you're convicted, like if you had a public defender who was encouraging you, get a plea deal, because if this goes to trial, it'd be worse. So just say, but you're innocent and you're the only person with no law degree here, and everybody's telling you just plead your case out. I do want to point out, though, I love that clip that you played. Ban the box legislation. Mm-hmm. Forgive me for being overprepared, because I don't know where it stands federally, but locally, this was a huge piece of legislation across the country. Did you?
So
can you talk about it a bit? I want people to know, ban the box legislation is when that is removed.
That's right. We don't ask about any previous criminal offenses, period, in the application process. And only after the job has been offered do we check your criminal background history to see if the event has anything to do. Is it a financial crime?
Right.
And we just hired you as the bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. And then there is a conversation, not even a withdrawal of the offer, a conversation so that we can get into the nuance of what happened and decide that that's still a move we want to make. Right. And so it measures people from their merit, not off of the mistake you made, but it measures you on your merit. Are you qualified for the position? Mm-hmm. Do you have the previous experience that will add to the role? And if you meet that off of the content of your person and the qualifications you present, you get offered the job. And unfortunately, and I know that there are various versions of this that exist around the country, but where's the wholesale, movement of that? Where is the movement? The brother went through any number of different fields at which this question is asked and becomes an immediate disqualifier for the position. An immediate disqualifier.
Well, you talked about juries.
Same thing about juries.
You
cannot serve on a jury if you have a felony.
That should be the main person, because you know what it's like on the inside. And if you're deciding somebody's liberty, you are.
You know what it's like on the inside, but you also know what it's like to have a system ganged against you everywhere.
So nowhere in the country you can serve on a jury.
You may not.
I had no idea.
And if you and in most places, you certainly can't vote. You certainly don't get to vote automatically. But that's what I'm saying. This is a moment. The brother said, this is not a political statement. This is an equal opportunity. And this is right. And because I think that's what we want to achieve even in this mini pod, which is if it's good for the goose and it's good for the gander, if there are pieces of this that we truly are critical of, that you think do not serve us, the people or the system, then dismantle it. Mm-hmm. Then let's take this thing to the carpet. Let's take it all the way through. Let's think about it through its logical conclusion. What are the many ways listed out in which the system does not serve us, and rather it acts against us and is not to the betterment of society, but rather simply to be punitive or to get back at somebody? Okay, you believe that? Then let's go through and let's figure out those pieces that we have to remove. And I think if we can find common cause there, because their version of common cause is simply saying, he's a felony and now he can relate to black and brown people. That's some bull, right?
It's
disrespectful. It's disingenuous. It's not true. It's malarkey.
Tell me you don't know Biden. Black people without saying you don't know black people.
And it's real.
Parading that ridiculously racist.
So I just think we ought to use the moment, if we could, as a co-opt. And I also think it requires us to really interrogate the language that we use when we refer to people. Regardless of their qualifications and what they bring to society, as simply a felon.
And one thing I wanted to just point out, Lolo put in our research that as of now, 37 states and over 150 cities and counties have implemented some form of ban the box legislation. I really appreciate you all leaning into this topic. I think the person that's coming to mind and it just has been very heavy on my spirit, in addition to Marilyn Mosby and what we're seeing her go through on the other side of a conviction, is Crystal Mason, who, of course, is the black woman in Texas who was convicted of a felony, was trying to get reengaged in society, goes to vote, and then faced 5 years. Her conviction was overturned, and then they went right back at her. So we'll see what happens, but our prayers and thoughts are certainly with Crystal, and we hope for the balancing scales of justice. This has been remarkable to watch all the contortions that people will make for one man. For hopefully they can figure out how to do it for all of us.
Yeah. Level it up. Level it up. If it's good for him or bad for him, then consider whether it's good or bad for the rest of us.
I'm glad we did this. This was a good mini pod, guys.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Please make sure that you are sending in your comments and your thoughts, not just on this issue, but so many more. Remember to rate, review, subscribe, and tune in to our regular episode on Thursday. Welcome home, y'all.
Welcome home, everybody. Home.
As one of the few black state attorneys, Marilyn Mosby took a number of political risks during her 8-year tenure. She moved to decriminalize sex work and marijuana. She established programs to provide nonviolent drug offenders with alternatives to incarceration, and even started one of the country's only youth and prevention departments. But it wasn't until after her push to prosecute the officers who killed Freddie Gray that she found herself on the other side of the courtroom, convicted of fraud for withdrawing funds from her own Baltimore deferred compensation retirement account, something 739 other city employees, including three people who worked in the same agency as Attorney Mosby, did during the pandemic. Yet she was the only one prosecuted and now faces up to 40 years in prison. Marilyn Mosby joins me now. I guess the first most obvious question is, how are you doing? This must have hit you like a Mack truck.
I mean, first and foremost, I'm blessed. And so thank you for having me on. It's still an incredibly sobering moment, right? I've done absolutely nothing wrong, nothing illegal, nothing criminal.
This was your money. Was there any public money involved in this transaction?
No, absolutely not. This was not, despite how I've been vilified, when the gag order was in place and I was unable to defend myself. This is not PPP loans. This is not a COVID relief funding. This was the money that I was putting away every 2 weeks in a retirement savings account. And I was advised I could withdraw from this fund. There was, you know, the person that testified, the government witness, got on the stand and said all I needed to do was suffer a $50 adversity.
Right.
And I had more than a $50 adversity as a result of COVID. So I didn't even take the stand once that came out. Yeah. Right. And it's like, obviously, I'm not going to be convicted. I know that this was politically targeted. And it was sobering.
Talk about this, because you do say that you've been targeted. Mm-hmm. And why do you think that happened? Because the thing that changed between you indicting those officers in the Freddie Gray case and this is the president changed. The Justice Department changed. And Leo Wise got a lot more power. Talk about that a little bit.
So, I mean, I think that you've kind of touched upon all of it. Right. Like when you look at the policies that were being implemented. Not only did President Trump say, I need to prosecute myself, but it 2 months after, you know, Larry Krasner from Philadelphia and I called him out in the Washington Post, they started this investigation.
And who was Larry Krasner?
Larry Krasner is a Philadelphia district attorney.
Right. And so there is a sense, I think a lot of people would be shocked that, you know, the Murdoch, the guy who allegedly killed his son, is facing 40 years. They're trying to sentence you to 40 years. The sentencing is on the 23rd of May.
It is.
What do you want to see happen? I know there's a petition asking President Biden to pardon you. Is that what you want?
I mean, I think that that's appropriate. I mean, I don't believe that I know that I've done absolutely nothing wrong, nothing criminal. And to be separated from my children for 40 years as a result of withdrawing $90,000 of my own money, it just makes absolutely no sense. It's illogical. And so, you know, I want the people that I fought for. I fought so hard. First generation college student. They're trying to take my law license, you know, in an emergency petition, an unprecedented move. You know, I want this justice system that I fought so hard to equalize and to balance the scales of justice, where the business model is based off the backs of Black and brown people, for the people that I fought for to understand and recognize that I need them to fight for me, not because it's Marilyn Mosby, but because something like this goes beyond Marilyn Mosby. If they can do this to Marilyn Mosby, who had the audacity to challenge the status quo, they can do this to anybody. They can do this more specifically to those prosecutors that have the courage and the gall to challenge the status quo in the way that I did.
And the reason I think it stands out is that you did have, you know, the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, dismiss two prosecutors he claimed were George Soros progressives. There is this sort of, you know, Bill Barr railed against you by name and others, saying that what you all were doing, disrupting the system in favor of the incarcerated, was destroying the system and you all needed to pay for it. Do you feel that that you are part of that?
I mean, he made it very clear in February 2020 when he addressed the sheriffs of America that these rogue social justice prosecutors, we will do anything by any means necessary, whether jurisdictionally or any individual politician that comes in the rule of and goes between the rule of law. And so that's exactly what they have done, right? They've targeted me. And as I stated before, this is a 4-year-long investigation where they've combed every aspect of my life. With unannounced, going to people's homes, my neighbors, at 5 o'clock, the FBI knocking on their door, intimidating folks. They issued subpoenas to all of the Black churches in 5 months before my reelection, not only to get me out of office, but they've done this to demonize me and to vilify me and to break me psychologically, break me professionally, break me spiritually, break me financially. I've lost everything. I've lost everything.
And meanwhile, one of the officers that was involved in Freddie Gray's death is now going to oversee the Baltimore Police Integrity Unit. I mean, that does seem to be a message. You have two young children. They are preteens, so, you know, 13, 15. How are they holding up under all this?
I mean, this is...
And you're a single mom.
I'm now a single mom. I filed for divorce of a 25-year relationship as a result of the chasms that were drawn between this. But they're not 3 and 5 years old no more. I can't shield them from the negativity. You know, children have come up to them and asked them that's why your mom's going to jail, right? They've been traumatized through all of this. But the most sobering thing, and I got to just say, I'm so grateful about all of it, is that God has still covered them, right? They're still prospering despite the trauma that's been imposed upon them. More recently, my daughter had a cotillion and unannounced, right? She said she wanted to go to law school and become a prosecutor. She didn't even tell me. I was like, wow, right? So I feel like I'm doing something good. At the end of the day, I'm a positive example where before, I didn't want them to come into the courtroom for the first trial. But the second one, I really wanted them to see what it looks like to face adversity and to have faith and to have strength in the face of adversity.
Would you advise prosecutors to go as hard as you did? I mean, vacating nearly 800, criminal cases. Mm-hmm. Would you advise people to take those progressive steps? And what would you say about the risks to doing that?
I mean, justice is always worth the price paid for its pursuit. I would not do anything differently. And I know that God does not forsake the righteous. And so, you know, I know he will have the final say, and I'm confident. I'm confident that this administration will see past the political sort of attacks and why I've been convicted.
Marilyn Mosby, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here.
Next up on the Ebony Spectrum, we look at the life of Reverend James Lawson, who just passed away. We're going to go back to a TED Talk that he did a few years ago. The title of it is called Shaping Your Destiny.
On February the 6th, 1957, for the first time, I grasped the hand and the eyes of Martin Luther King Jr. in Oberlin, Ohio. We were of the same age, though we did not know that when we met and shook hands. But most of all, we were both convinced that through nonviolent struggle, we could change the face of this nation and begin the process whereby, in fact, the nation could really become a democracy with liberty and equality and justice for all people. I had planned anyway, when I finished graduate work in Ohio, to move south to work because that's where the majority of black people live still, and that's where the tyranny and the hostility and the oppression of racial segregation and all of its concomitant parts was most crucial and most evident. But taking the hand of Martin Luther King Jr. and our first time having a personal conversation face to face on who we were and what we were about, I knew him, he did not know me. I decided I would not wait till I had graduate degrees to move south, but that I instead, because of his urging, I would drop out of graduate school and move south as quickly as I could to join the struggle. The emerging nonviolent campaigns and movements to reshape the meaning of this nation. And so I want, for the most part, to simply say three things. First of all, our nation must be changed. The present debate for the President of the United States demonstrates to me, as I've followed it in the media, print and whatnot, shows me that the nation and the 324 million people of us that we can call we the people of the United States of America are very vulnerable for the forces of history past and present that we do not understand and that confuses so many of us. Let me suggest to you, as a minor but important point, nothing in my judgment is so important as the fact that in 1767, I used the date deliberately, 1767, the people in the 13 colonies of this nation agreed to a primary principle that represents both the finest religious wisdom of the human race, but the finest philosophical wisdom of the human race. And it was said this way in the Declaration of Independence: we hold these truths as self-evident, that all are created equal, that all are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now understand, that statement was a radical formation of a new philosophy in a world that was largely dominated by kings and queens and monarchs and emperors and by top-down rulers, largely dominated by the oppression of women, largely dominated by the notion that ordinary people did not actually matter and should not have a role in their own destiny. Most of us are unaware of the fact that that voice, 1765 to 1775, before the war, was the most revolutionary moment in the history of the human family, that declared, no, 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 we are not a people formed by creation for the purpose of tyranny and oppression. We are rather endowed by creation with the gift of life. That gift of life itself has certain unalienable rights, and that we have the capacity to govern ourselves. We have the capacity and the common sense to be able to shape and form a society where there is real access for everyone. Out of that 10 years before July 4th, 1776, came the notion, we must form a society where there is equality, liberty, and justice for all. A community where every baby born has access to the things that make for life, where every person, regardless of gender or color or culture or tribe or the rest of it, will be provided with a social political echo space that will allow them to tap the gift of life itself and to contribute not only to their own well-being, but to the well-being of all. Now, most of us in America do not understand that, and we do not accept it. But worse than that, we cannot and do not accept it because our history of 500 years at least has been a history where dark forces of wrong have helped to shape our minds and our hearts and our attitudes so that we cannot feel, we cannot see, we cannot hear, we cannot think. Those forces that have shaped American life and by which too many of us are influenced and empowered today are racism, sexism, violence, and plantation capitalism. Racism, sexism, violence, and plantation capitalism. All four of these diminish the dignity of human personality. All four of these permit structures of oppression to emerge that deprive today millions of people of the right to their equality and to liberty and to justice. And I say to you that there is no way that we can eradicate the demonic racism in our land if we do not eradicate the sexism, if we do not eradicate the violence, and if we do not transform plantation capitalism to an economy of genuine opportunity for every boy, every man, every woman, every child in our nation. So I propose to you that the major tasks of work are thus, first of all, our major piece of work, we the living, we the created, our major piece of work is to make certain that we push and move our own life to the full God-given, creation-given capacity of life itself. Life is power. Life is light. Life is love. Your primary task in life is to exploit the gift of life so that you become fully alive, fully a man or a woman in love with life and using the powers of life to shape your own life and to shape your family's life and to shape your world. It is not enough to earn a living or to build a career. You must build a life, your life. This is rooted in the ancient wisdom of you shall love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength and your neighbor as yourself. So whatever you do, however you manage, if you're a younger person in the midst of education, education is to help you exploit the gift of life and love and laughter and beauty and wonder and mystery of life itself. Not primarily for how much money you make or how popular you become at all. Your life is the massive, precious, unique gift of the universe or the gift of God. What you make of it and how you live it and how you exploit it will determine your gift to yourself and your gift to the world. Robert Louis Stevenson, a poet from the 19th century here in the United States, said, "What you are becoming and what you are capable of becoming is the sole purpose for life itself." Nonviolent struggle has a very simple first step. And that first step is to encourage ordinary people like ourselves to claim the powers that life gives us. That's the meaning of Martin Luther King Jr. and Fannie Lou Hamer and of the movements of the 1953 to 1957, roughly, I'll say. Ordinary people like those of us gathered here, recognizing that they had all that they needed to forge a nation and to forge a people where indeed access was really available. And then the final point I would make about this is that the only way this can happen is through nonviolent struggle. And I'm not speaking now of nonviolence as anti-violence. That is not what nonviolence is. I'm not now speaking of violent prevention. That may also be important. I'm talking in part about the fact that our country is a country trapped, embedded, addicted to the mythology of violence, which means that, for an example, the issue of gun is not the issue. It's the issue of the disease. That's an addictive disease. In some measure, it's a pathological disease. The disease of thinking that violence is the way you become fully human, that violence is the way that you manage and control other people, that violence will produce the kind of change you want. To see the idiocy of this, look to the media for the news of Israel and Palestine. Israel and Palestine has been engaged for over 100 years in the same way that the papers describe the issues going there of killing and hatred today, this morning. For 100 years, they have thought that they could become what God wanted them to be with violence. Now, I challenge you to, over the next 2 or 3 days, listen to that discussion. Listen to the people talking. Listen to the prime ministers. Listen to our own American policies. Listen to our own American business forces. And see if you can hear a simple, simple statement that when you have tried violence and hatred and division for 100 years, and where you have poured billions of dollars from Europe and United States into that violence, and you haven't been able to effect the feeding of the hungry or the breaking down of the mantles of hostility, and you're still fighting, when do you stop and ask the question, if for 100 years it hasn't worked, maybe we're not doing something that is essential in order to get change. Racism, sexism, violence, plantation capitalism are not the way towards having peace and truth and beloved communities. They're opposed to it. Nonviolence suggests that the greatest force of the universe is the force of life that is lodged in you. Come to understand that force in you of life, living energy, love, truth, beauty, and use that force for personal and social change. And you will have tapped what Gandhi of India called the force more powerful, against which the evil forces in our world, in yourself or in others, cannot prevail. This final sort of statement, make a life, your life. The human race has not yet achieved the nobility or the understanding of its universe that is still possible. The best for the thousands of years journey of the human race is yet to come. The problems have not been resolved. The healing has not yet taken place. We are not even using and tapping 20% of the power of life that is in each of us. And then the final thing is that in the 21st century, we need campaigns and movements essentially of compassion, for nonviolence is love, Gandhi said. Nonviolence is truth. Nonviolence is soul force. We need in the 21st century of the United States campaigns and movements of nonviolence. Our nation must be changed if our nation is going to live. Nonviolence is the gathering together of a notion of how you effect personal and social, economic, political change that in truth will be inclusive and holistic, that will be healing and helpful. In all our strivings, we, especially of the black community and the Hispanic community, the people of color, the women particularly, we must understand that no matter how much witness we may make or how many good works we may perform, that if this nation under God, under creation, under the universe, is to emerge in a fashion where there is equality, liberty, and justice, the beloved community for all, the new idea erected or begun in the 20th century must be nonviolent campaigns. Your life, whether it be the best you think it is today or the worst, your life, if it's going to aspire to the levels that you have in your imagination and your dreams and visions, your life must make a life And you must, with making a life, join family and friends and neighbors and community organizations and make the nonviolent struggle the campaign that can overcome evil, dissipate insults, change the violence. Consider this. If all the billions of dollars in technology and resources that have been put into violence in the last 50 years by the United States of America were transformed into feeding the babies of the earth, think for a moment what a vastly superior, nobler, loving world this would be to make a life more than a career. Make a world that is yet to be. A friend of mine has said it well. I am a citizen of a country that does not yet exist. Be a citizen in the United States of a country that does not yet exist, but through the power of equality, liberty, and justice for all, a country that will one day exist in every way. Thank you.
Joining me now is, and I say this proudly, New York City Councilman Yusef Salaam, a Democrat, and one of the Central Park Five, now the exonerated five. Councilman Salaam, we appreciate you joining us tonight. Let me go specifically to this. In 1989, Donald Trump took out newspaper ads here in New York calling for the death for you and four other Black and Latino teenagers after you were arrested and charged with a rape and murder of a white woman in Central Park that none of you committed. You were not exonerated till 2002. You did several years in jail. Others did as well. And Kari Weiss, who you know works closely with us, National Action Network, would be on my radio show in the morning, did 13 years before you all were exonerated. Now, since then, Trump, even as president, has never acknowledged or admitted he was wrong in your case. This week, he was convicted of a felony that could mean prison time for the former president in the same very court complex that you were sentenced in, as well as the other four, and that some of us marched. Nobody more valiant than your own mother, where you were wrongly convicted. What struck me is that even though some of us talked about we should go down and bring this up, you never went down in front of that court one time, never said a word during the trial, even though he called for your death. He never spoke out on all of the race cases in New York but yours. What were you thinking when you looked down Center Street where you stood and saw this jury convict Donald Trump on 31 felonies?
You know, Reverend Al, first of all, thank you for having me. I want to first echo the fact that for many, many years, I called it the criminal system of injustice because of what happened to me and people just like me. And when it came to Donald Trump, I was very, very clear. I wanted to make sure that people understood that I wanted him to be afforded the opportunity that was not afforded me or my brothers. They looked at the color of our skin and deemed us guilty in a country that says you're innocent until proven guilty. Whereas when you come to the court system and you have a person who has been privileged and has used their money to garner favor, now getting to understand what exactly the criminal legal system is all about. I wanted him to be able to feel that, to see that, to experience that. And I was proud that our jurors, 34 counts, but when you think about the 12 jurors, each of them looked at all of the counts and made a decision to find this man guilty. And so that, I think that that is significant. I think that number comes up to something like 408 different guilty charges, right, from 12 individuals. Profound.
Yeah.
And for me, I was looking at this really with tremendous hope, with the opportunity to say to myself again, is this an opportunity for us to have a semblance of becoming the United States of America. Yeah, all of the rhetoric that Donald Trump has been spewing has been the exact opposite of that, that we are divided. We've been divided. We've been divided, I think, even more so under his so-called leadership. But now we get the opportunity to really, truly understand he is not like us. And that's not just a rap song. But the truth of the matter is that we've always had a love affair with Donald Trump. Some of my favorite hip-hop artists, like Nas, he said, I want to be rich like Donald Trump and Marlon Maple. His father gave him a loan that was more than the money that we received from the state. And so we have to really, truly understand that. Where are we right now in this country when we read the Constitution, we the people? We were never considered a whole human being. They've never reformed that. And so for an individual...
Let me ask you this, Youssef, because we're going to be out of time. They're saying a lot of young blacks are looking to Donald Trump. Those young blacks watching you right now, as one who Donald Trump took ads out to take your life, what do you want to say to them?
I want to tell them, don't be tricked and hoodwinked and pulled away because you have an individual who is willing to speak in a manner that we have not heard before. There have been many people who look just like me, who have been willing to speak truth to power. But when you have a person like Donald Trump who is saying the same thing off camera, he's saying on camera, we got to pay attention. He is not like us.
All right. Councilman Youssef Salam, thank you. I know you're in Atlanta and you broke in your schedule, but thank you for making that, for being on with us tonight.
Very interesting comments from Brother Youssef. Now, in our last segment for today, we go to our good sister in D.C., Karen Hunter, as she talks about Don Lennon.
Who knew you were going to be this guy? Joel Christian Gill is here. So is this a children's book you're doing with Don Lemon? Because that's your specialty. You're an illustrator. You do art like you did Stamped with Ibram Kendi.
Yeah.
What are you doing with Don Lemon that requires your expertise?
I'm doing a graphic novel. So Don is doing a middle grade graphic novel about his life growing up as a gay kid in the South in the 70s.
Okay.
And so, you know, Don has issues in his life that I think are really important to deal with. Like, we're talking about men today. Like, you know, I wrote in my book, Fights, my memoir, about how I survived sexual assault, how I survived racism and trauma and poverty. And I just don't think enough Black men talk about this openly. And I think it's just really important for people to know this kind of things. And so that's legitimately what drew me. It wasn't Don. It was like the fact that he's talking about these things, because I think those things are important for us to talk about, because I think we get stigmatized into these situations where you think that something happens to you and it makes you, whether you're homophobic, it feeds into that toxic masculinity, right? Like, people have this understanding that you say toxic masculinity, that you're saying all masculinity is toxic. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the masculinity that says the only emotions you can have are anger and rage. You know what I mean? Like, those things, like, you can't have, like, you need to be broader in your understanding. I don't believe that you can change policy I don't believe you can change the world through policy,
You can't legislate it. You can't legislate it.
I think you change the world through pop culture and, like, you putting things into the zeitgeist. And there are perfect examples of this, right? During the civil rights era, we had all these people afraid of Black people taking over the world. So we get a movie called Planet of the Apes. You got, right after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you got all of these movies. Japan started making these movies about in the world, right? And then after the 2016 election, we had all the horror movies came out that about holding still and being quiet. Right. If you hold still, you be quiet, everything's going to be okay. So when you got the Dobbs decision, like, what was on television? Ellen was on television, and we had Will and Grace. Like, people have been watching gay people, like, move through the world in a normal way. Or when we had all those disaster movies, the Comet movies, all the presidents were Black. 2008, we get a Black president. I don't believe those things are coincident. So I believe that the way we do this is to put that stuff in the zeitgeist. And you know, this is the thing. You know that you can tell when that stuff is working, because what are they doing to those books? What are they doing right now?
Banning them. They're banning them, Joel.
Those books because they don't want us to see other people. They don't want us to build empathy. And they know that books like March, books like Stamped, books like Genderqueer by my homie Maya Kobabe. Like, they know that those books actually do those kind of things, and they don't want that. They want women to stay in the kitchen, and they want Black people to stay subservient, and they want queer people to be quiet. They don't want us out in the world, right? So, and I think that's the thing that, you know, I believe about building pop culture, building policy through pop culture, because when people can see it, you recognize how it works, right? It's like those racists that grew up always racist in a southern town, and they never knew anybody Black, and then their daughter happens to marry a Black man, and they get mixed grandbabies, and they're just like, I'm no longer racist, right? Because I have proximity to these people, and they're my people now, right? And I think that's what you got to do. You got to do that for people.
No, I agree. And while I do not value Don Lemon as a journalist, I think that this project is something like we have to be able to not toss out the baby with the bathwater. But to me, if it saves a child or it saves a person and they get to see themselves, I will support it. But I will not ever support him being a journalist. And I stand by that. But that's, you know, we could have that discussion or argument.
It's good. Don, I love Don. I think he's a great dude. I think he got into the electric asshole's ass there. When he interviewed him on Twitter a little bit, and although I did tell him, I'm like, I don't know why you decided to do that. I said, you knew he was
All of it. It's, you know, I feel like we're in an age where no longer can people chase a check, and when I say chase a check, do things that compromise not just their integrity but the rest of ours as well for money and fame and success, and we not talk about it. So we're going to talk about, I don't care whether you are on ESPN and I've known you for a while, or you are Don Lemon, who seems like a very nice man, you know, however, you know, like at some point, because the decisions people make affect us. So it's not in a vacuum. You're not just making a you decision at that point. We are all now grafted into the view of Black people or what have you based on how you open your mouth and talk.
You know, what's funny is that when all the stuff with Candace Owens came out, I saw something and I was like, so I texted Don. I'm like, listen, Don, you should interview Candace Owens. And he sent me a video about Black journalists and Black entertainers not giving her space. He was like, we should not give her air.
What?
Right? Yeah. And I'm like, all right. And I was like, and so what was funny about that is I was like, you know, I think, you know, with Candace Owens, right? I think she's got a baby face. Right. And like they get to people see her in real life and she's probably charming before she gets on camera. You know what I mean? And they get all that stuff. I said, Don, you will be immune to that. She can't charm you like that. Right. You can do that. And he was like, I'm not giving somebody like that space. He's like, I'm not doing it. And I'm like, OK, all right. I respect that. But I was laughing about it because I thought it would be funny. Right. Because, you know, I'm a troll like that. You see my Instagram. Yeah, I'm a troll.
You are. I like it. You know, as a recovering troll, I appreciate it from afar.
I always tell people I got a good memory and I'm petty.
Yeah. Well, my memory sucks. So, but my petty is I don't know. Understand my petty outdistances my memory.
You be petty LaBelle. I'll be petty WAP. There we go.
Okay. We here for it. I love it.
Well, folks, if you notice, in Black Talk Radio, we discuss a lot of different issues, and we're very, I wouldn't say emotional about it, but real straightforward about it, as you can hear in a lot of these discussions. That is one of the reasons why Rick and I have been doing this for many, many years, and the station that we're on really got lambasted for really coming out and talking about a lot of various issues. From the crack cocaine epidemic to having people like Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee on, Gil Scott-Heron, and even discussing many local issues like the Johnny Gamage murder in Brentwood. So that's the way we look at things, and hopefully you won't be offended by it. Thanks for listening to our program this week, and we'll see you next time here on Ebony Spectrum. Rick and I say peace.
I just got a text asking me to approve a bank transfer I didn't make. I bet you get messages like this too. So much of our lives are online today, from email to banking and everything in between. To make sure my information was protected, I checked out CISA's Secure Our World website for simple steps to stay safe online. Now I know how to protect myself from scammers, and you can learn too. Go to CISA at CISA.gov/secureourworld.
One in five Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us don't know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma and advance mental health. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey, out there in radio land, you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 on your radio, WRCT.org on your web receiving device of choice. It is 7 o'clock. That means it is time for the radio calendar. We're going to rock it through the radio calendar and stall out on the concert calendar. So I should just tell you right now. The Pittsburgh Banjo Club rehearses every Wednesday at 8 p.m. You can stop by to enjoy their wonderful music and perhaps have a bite to eat and a thing to drink. Go drink a thing. Founded in 1988, the Pittsburgh Banjo Club is an all-volunteer band and organization that uses banjos, trumpets, tubas, and bass to perform popular music from the 1920s and 1930s. The Pittsburgh Banjo Club rehearses at the Allegheny Elks Lodge number 339, which is located at 400 Cedar Avenue in Pittsburgh's North Side. If you would like to see the Banjo Club, you must make a reservation by Tuesday at 5 p.m. for each Wednesday event. You can do that by giving them a call, 412-321-1834. Moving on to the concert list. Tonight, the Scott Bonney Quartet will be at Con Alma. Bonney? Bonney. I don't know. I'm sorry. The Symphonic Sorcery Tour comes to Remedy, including Ice Giant, the Zebellion Triangle, and Iron Brigade. Zebellion. It's tricky to pronounce them X's. Let's see. T-Pain will be at Stage AE along with La Russell, Nando STL, and Young Cash. And the Pittsburgh Winery is hosting the Zoob Masters Recital. Tomorrow night, Kaz will be at Club Cafe with Fusion Illusion. Roboto Project is hosting Harrison Gordon along with TRSH and Elephant Jake and Stand and Wave and Bogues. Funhouse at Mr. Smalls is hosting the Yeggs, who are having an album release show. They're playing along with the Draculas and DJ Easy Ed. And Fastlane MDOT will be at Spirit Lodge along with Yola Bands, Good Busy Cutman Chunk, and Buck Biddy. On Friday, Abstract X Dylan Owen will be at the Club Cafe, along with Jake Luke, T Burke, and The Architect. Funhouse is hosting Secret Gardens, along with Sincerely, Anton Ego, and God's End. Abstract Theory will be at the Government Center, along with Liz Scott, Connie Roses, and Druzio. Man Man will be at Mr. Small's. Buffalo Rose will be at the Pittsburgh Winery for their vinyl release show. They're playing along with Ursula Hansberry. Danielle Ponder will be at Thunderbird along with Bree Dominique. On Saturday, starting at 3, Thunderbird is hosting the Keystone Vibe Music Fest featuring Ripa Shreddas, Just Those Guys, Jasperillo, Austin Coco Huffs, Moonshine Jasmine, and Slam Band and Sam. Excision will be at Stage AE, along with AT Aliens, Don Timmer and Lays, and Emorphic. Luke Severide will be at the Funhouse at Mr. Smalls, along with Ronnie Fleming. For an early well, they're doing two shows, one at 7 and one at 9:30. Everybody's Worried About Owen will be at the Roboto Project, along with The Last Arizona,